Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two, gentlemen? Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast, much like Nick Ehlers, ignored by the Jets organization. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, who has a no-movement clause with the Airport Lounge, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, buddy?
Well, Mike, it's with great sadness that I have to share with you that one of our longtime sponsors is no longer in business. Sadly, Dongs, Thongs, and Bongs is no more. I received this sad news indirectly late last week, and I didn't share it with you, Mike, because I didn't want to ruin your weekend.
Oh.
I don't know who or what to blame. Trudeau, Obama, probably the woke left-wing radicals and their anti-sex drugs and lingerie stance. Speaking of needing some help from the right wing, let's talk about some Winnipeg.
Oh, that was masterful.
No, it was brilliant. No. There is no word to describe its perfection. So I'm forced to make one up. Scrumtrelescent.
So A.
I was thinking about going, speaking of failed business models, let's talk about the Winnipeg Jets.
Both good, but well done on the segue there. And I had no idea. I mean, who would have thought that a paraphernalia company so creatively named as Thongs, Bongs, and whatever else it is. You've said it a million times. I still can't get it right. That is a shame. Another fake sponsor down for the Airport Lounge.
Yeah, I know you like to go early in the calendar year and drop a couple grand in there and really stock up on your Dongs, Thongs, and Bongs just so that you don't have to go there multiple times during the course of the year. But yeah, apparently it is all closed up, and I guess that explains why their checks have been bouncing and they haven't been taking my calls.
Well, on that note, we've got a lot to get to. We're going to go into check-in time. Okay, so obviously we have a lot to talk about. The Jets went 3-5 in their last eight since our last recording. But I did want to hopefully change the tide a little in terms of vibes on this podcast and, wow, and maybe talk a little optimistically. Very recently, on the 25th, we made the Winnipeg Jets finally dipped their toe in the trade market, picked up Nito Niederreiter, which I thought and I think summarily throughout Jets Twitter, whatever that means. But I really savvy and solid pick. Not a guy that I think was on a lot of radars and pundits and jokesters like us aside. And, you know, he provides some size, whatever that means. He's 6'2". He's been, you know, relatively productive throughout his career. He's a multiple 20-goal scorer. He has 18 goals and 10 assists now, which would rank him fourth in goals on the team currently and seventh in points, which is sorely needed. Obviously, both Vaughn and I just finished watching the Islanders paste us 4-0, get shut off by Varlamov. But he, you know, he's a driver of play. He likes to shoot the puck, another thing we'll probably touch on in this podcast. But what were your thoughts?
Well, it's been a roller coaster of emotions Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Friday, the world was collapsing after the loss to Colorado. Saturday, Chevy was the greatest GM in the history of the NHL. And then Sunday, we come crash landing back down to earth after watching the Islanders game. As for the trade in isolation, it's a very good trade, I think. I think we needed to bring someone in the top six. And absolutely, Nito Niederreiter, give me fuel, give me fire.
I knew it. Good for
you. Give me Nito Niederreiter, which has to be his goal song, by the way. Anyways, this is a guy who's always caught my eye when he's played against the Jets.
Yeah.
He's a good player. He's exactly what we were looking for exactly the price we should be looking to give up. Now, a second-round pick is nothing just to be scoffed at by any stretch of the imagination, but I think, we can get into the argument about, addition by subtraction on some of the guys on our current roster, but being able to bring in someone and add to the roster without subtracting from the roster, I think was an attractive option for the Jets. Also, that this is not an expiring contract.
Yeah,
he has one more year on the contract at $4 million, which is not overly crazy or anything like that. Fits in really well. Now, unfortunately, with the injury to Perfetti,
yes,
I think really what's been dragging down the top six is two things. It is, and I'm not sure it's this right order. It's been the insistence on playing Wheeler in the top six.
Thank you. Yep.
Regardless of what's going on.
Yep.
And then the lack of continuity amongst the top six. Now, we'll probably get into it later about, you know, some of the moves that Bonus makes and has made over the course of the season, you know, how they might be effective in a November, but less effective in a February. But in terms of just the trade, I think this is something we need two things to happen on a positive side. If we set the Wheeler thing aside, we need Nito Niederreiter to come in and make an impact.
Absolutely.
And we need Ehlers to get back on his game. And maybe this is the catalyst that can do just that. What are your thoughts?
Yes. So I 1,000% agree with our problems, you know, they're probably fourfold or fivefold rather than twofold. But I think you nailed the top two, at least at this stage. And, you know, we need top six forwards that can drive play. I mean, very anecdotally, you know, the sort of the top down model and the evolving hockey model. Like him and have liked him throughout his career. I mean, I think he peaked in the 15, 16, 17, 18 range, but he's still a very...
So did I, though. So did I.
I'm still waiting for mine. But he's above average, I think, top six winger. And you touched upon it, but like I did a little bit of homework just in terms of the value or relative value thereof of draft picks. And I'm of the camp,
right,
and have been for quite some time, that second round picks, while they look good on paper and can be good trade fodder, ultimately don't result in productive players. Like if we look back at the Jets, you have a cast of characters like Patan and Comrie and Lucas Sutter and Gustafson. Samberg has really only been the... So he's sort of the one bright spot in second round picks, and he can't even keep his roster spot against Logan Stanley. So yeah. Again, it doesn't negate the possibility that you sort of find a diamond in the rough, but mathematically, if you look at in terms of 300 games played or 200 games played in the NHL, it takes a huge nosedive, even starting at the sixth overall pick, but especially after the bottom 15 in the first round. And everything after that, I think the numbers are a bit different, but not appreciably so, in that you probably have just as much chance of hitting on a fifth rounder than you do a second rounder, especially a late one. And so I love it. I and again, like you mentioned, adding without taking off this current roster is something we just can't afford to do with Perfetti out. And, you know, who knows what kind of, I don't know, I have no idea what kind of locker room you guys, but maybe it's the sort of B12 energy boost that these guys need and can be the catalyst to get some of the forwards out of the doldrums.
Yeah, you would think that would manifest a little bit today. Like, today was such a flat effort. Now, just relating it back, not trying to go off on too much of a tangent here, but you're quite right. This is definitely a trade that sends the signal to the room that the general manager is interested and believing in making something happen this year. Now, what will be very interesting is the continued evaluation on where this team is and how much of the future they should mortgage by draining it into the present through trades. Now, because that's typically what you do. You're going to trade away future value for present value in a trade when you're in the Jets position. They still have elite goaltending. They still have some really nice pieces. They're not in a good place right now. And it will be very interesting to see if more is done. I think this is a very good single move, but will it be enough? It would be a very curious move if this is all they do, right? I think that it could have more negative than positive if this is the only one thing they do. Maybe it was seen as a bit of a panic move and we don't believe in you enough to really go all in. We'll put a few chips in the middle, but we're not going to go all in. And how what type of effect that will have in the locker room. But I think in isolation, this is a very good move that will help us this year and next.
Yeah, and I think you nailed sort of the tone and tenor of it, because, and I apologize, Vaughn, if I'm stepping on your toes as I want to do, but this is something I think is pertinent right at the top of this conversation where, well, you know, we're 15-15 in our last 30, the Jets are,
yeah,
and 29-1 in our first 30. So with, you know, and we're 35-21, we are now currently out of a secured playoff spot. We're in the first wild card. I haven't been following the Seattle game tonight. But if Seattle wins, we're in the second wild card and only 5 points out of a playoff spot, because Calgary's 5 points behind us. And if we juxtaposition that to some of our conversations just even a month ago, that's a huge fall. That's a big fall from grace. And you're right, Chevy might look at it and go, well, if this doesn't energize them, then I might just stop. I might put down the phone and say this team doesn't have it, or I can't put enough pieces together with Perfetti out in order to make this team competitive. And it looks like New Jersey's going to get Meyer. Like, everyone just keeps getting better also. And so I'll be interested to see within the next, obviously, week or so what the Jets do.
Yeah, their process, as we've talked about, has been pretty decent over this stretch of games where they haven't had the success that they had early in the season. They're generating a fair number of high danger chances, usually winning that battle. They've been generating a good number of expected goals for. Their luck has pretty much dried up in the sense that the puck is just not going in the net. And I think it's affected them mentally in the sense that the body language out there tonight wasn't very – was not
your boy.
Great. Well, yeah, there's – yeah, for sure. he's not alone on that one.
You're
we're
right.
Talking
Absolutely.
About Mark Scheifele
Absolutely,
here.
Absolutely, yeah.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
You know, let's see, if you had to go to work with Blake Wheeler every day and create with him. I mean, imagine if I was working with you in the office and how frustrating that would be. You'd assign me work. I just wouldn't do it. I'd be working on football all day long. And you would get really frustrated after a while because you know you're the Mark Scheifele of Ceridian Credit Union. And I am the Blake Wheeler of whatever I work for, meaning my best days are long behind me. But nevertheless, you know, things can change fast in professional sports. You know, I'm looking back over the 8 games just super quickly that have transpired since our last podcast. We defeated the Blackhawks at home 4-1. And then the Kraken defeated them 3-2 in a shootout.
Yeah.
Those were two good games. And then it just sort of fell off from there, you know. Not a very exciting or good game against the Blue Jackets in Columbus. And then we go out east for that road trip,
and we
really found out that the Eastern Conference is skating and playing at a level that is a whole notch above wherever we have been for the past, you know, 2 to 3 months.
Yeah, well
I
said.
Mean, the New Jersey, the Devils looked fast and good. The one win that we've had in the last week or so was the Rangers game, and that was one of, you know, the most disheartening and displeasing games to watch. And we won 4-1, you know, just something from that game. It wasn't the strongest night for Adam Lowry. Okay, he finished with 3% Corsi 4, which means he had 1 Corsi 4 and 32 Corsi against. A plus 1 and a minus 32.
Yeah, what's up with him?
I don't know. You'll find out later when we talk about penalty box.
Oh, there you go. I got one for you too.
So and then that just sort of bled in. Like we have a statement game. Next game, statement game. Well, actually, I meant next game's going to be our statement game. actually, what I meant really, really was the next game is going to be the statement game. So we've sucked. We've stopped scoring goals. I don't know. You know, not starting Hellebuyck in net was curious.
Very curious.
Was a huge risk.
Yep.
In the sense I saw someone speculate on social media that said, listen, we're not going to have a game where Hellebuck bails you out and you guys do all the wrong things. We're going to put the backup in. You guys got to do the right things if we're going to win. Okay.
Not sure I agree with that strategy.
I think that's, yeah, I think we just need to win at this point. And he is a member of the team. He does get paid like everyone else. So I don't know. Is there what from that spate of eight games that you pulled that either jumped out at you or was, you know, notable and quotable from your perspective?
Yeah, I guess from a macro perspective, and this is stating the obvious to a certain extent, and this is why, again, the Nino Niederreiter infusion may help, is that, like, we are Lowry's on a 32-game goal streak.
Yeah.
Sacco's at 20, Barron's at 17, Stenlund's at 11, and Coleman's at 10, and Appleton got one over this stretch, and he was bagging it too. Like, it's just, you can't beat really good teams, and the East, and you said it very well, is just better than the West. It's very evident watching these games, and it's very evident in watching even the Islanders this game, who were banged up and basically shut it down after the first period. But the fact that we came out so listless and got one shot in the first period is bonkers to me.
Yeah.
In addition to that, exactly as you said, putting in our backup goalie, listening to Kevin Sawyer tap dance his Fred Astaire throughout the game, where it's like, the Jets need a win. That's all they need. And then when we were losing, they just need good, positive pressure.
Yeah.
That's all they need. And then right at the end of the game, what they really need is a really good practice. And the next game is going to be the benchmark. It's like, no, the Colorado game was the benchmark. The first Islanders game was the benchmark. Yeah. This game was a benchmark. We're past benchmarks. This team's in a free-for-all. And I do agree with you that if you look at sort of the puck possession and high-danger chances, we've been trending up weirdly. It's a weird juxtaposition where at the start of the year, statistically, we weren't that great, but we were winning a lot of games. And now it's done a full 180. And, you know, I'm gonna do my best, Vaughn, and try and stay as positive as possible. And hopefully we sort of pull out of this skid and our results match our play. And again, I'm going to save my further comments for our first class assignment, because I have, you know, I have someone in mind that Rangers game obviously was one for the ages in terms of goaltending.
Yeah. Mike, I have a question for you. At what point in time does Kevin Sawyer's sycophantic drivel become an art form in and of itself?
I think it already is.
At what point is it so bad that it's actually good?
It's kitschy now. It really is. Like I used to sort of recoil in horror. And there's the really good Twitter account where what Kevin Sawyer says. So if you're ever missing some of his really, really best tidbits, go check that out. But it really is. It's like performance art at this point. Like I muted the last part of this Islanders game because I can't do it anymore. It keeps vacillating between absurd, sublime, and ridiculous all at the same time. You got to love it, I guess. You can't do anything else.
Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, we're hook, line, and sinker in with the Winnipeg Jets, right? You could always turn it off or not watch it, but that's just not going to happen. So three quick things about our most recent spate of games. They, very curiously, in Manhattan, when the Jets defeated the Rangers, our best players were actually pretty good on the night. Scheifele, Ehlers, PLD, and Connor each finished the night with a Corsi 4 percentage of 50% or higher, which I think might surprise you and others, given how it seemed like the Rangers ran roughshod over us each and every shift. But, you know, there were some decent performances, and our best players were our best players. Put Connor Hellebuck at the top of the list, and we won the game. And then against the Islanders, you know, I think part of what really hurt us is, like, when I think it was the second period, we outshot them 19-5.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah, I remember that.
You know, you got to be able to come out of that period with more than one goal for, you know what I mean? And in that game, the second they put Ehlers back on the first power play unit, they scored.
I had that written down.
Yeah. So, but the frustrating thing was, you know, after that great period where we outshoot the Islanders 19-5, we have a very disappointing third period. We're not able to follow up on it. In fact, the Islanders hold the balance of the play in that third period when we really needed a push. And then from there, it's been all downhill. I mean, the first period against the Avalanche was something else. I'm not sure we'll ever again in our hockey fan lives see any goalie give up four goals on five shots. Four goals on the first five shots of the game.
It was something.
And I'm sorry, they were good chances, but they weren't grade A chances. Some of those should have been saved. And then after that, the Avalanche were disinterested, right? They weren't trying to put the foot down on the gas.
No,
they were just coasting it out.
Yeah.
And it didn't look like the Islanders were doing much different tonight. Yeah, you know, the Jets got caught up in shots after being down 12-1 on the shot clock, right? It got pretty close towards the end of the game. But the Islanders were very, very comfortable in just sitting back and letting the Jets shoot from the perimeter. They weren't getting into the high danger area very often. They ended up with more high danger chances than the Islanders, but they only got into that area 13 times throughout the course of the game.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, the Islanders didn't need to generate the second and third period. They didn't need to get to the middle of the ice to generate those high-end chances because they were up and they knew that the Jets couldn't penetrate at the other end. So that's a bit, you know, it takes a look. It's a bit deceiving, I guess, is what I want to say in that one. But, you know, other than just the aesthetics of the score aside, there hasn't been a lot to pull from these last two games to give us hope. So, you know, will this one trade give enough of a spark to push us forward against the Kings and then back-to-back against Edmonton and then San Jose and then Minnesota? So we have some big games coming up.
Yeah.
Will it be enough? I don't know. But a couple things need to happen. I think our best players need to continue to be our best players, and we need some type of small support from the bottom six.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of that, like in the Islanders game today, you know, Ehlers on the power play, again on the second unit, and we'll get to that, but made a really nice zone entry, fed Lowry, and then Lowry stoned it. In other games, it's Appleton, right, where there's a series of tic-tac-toes, and the Appleton's supposed to finish the play, can't do it. Wheeler's guilty of as well. My hope, anyway, is that Niederreiter helps in that, because he is traditionally he's a better finisher than those guys. It's these plays, and again, we're overpassing the puck, and we can't seem to hit the broadside of a barnyard, but the overpassing only works to a certain extent at the end of the day if you have got all three guys in your forward line who can finish, and we just don't have that.
Yeah, the lack of the ability of the Jets to hit the net is something that has been noticeable to me for quite some time, and it is very interesting that it was picked up on the broadcast today. I love it when stuff I've researched and have written down in my notes for our next podcast is then picked up on the broadcast, and it looks like I'm just repeating what I saw on television. But hey, good for them for picking that up. It's at least something. I was also interested to see that the Jets, I think, have the fewest 5-on-5 goals in the month of February.
Yeah.
Or since February 1st. That's sickening. So two quick things I put out this week just on random tweets. I asked the question, are the Jets an average team that simply had a great start to the season due to vibes? And I think we're getting that answer. And the answer is yes. They don't, if you analyze their lineup, it should, I think they're, my heart wants to tell me they're more like the team that played well than the team that we're seeing now. But as they say, you are what your record says you are.
Yeah.
And the other thing I tweeted is Mason Appleton. I'm pretty sure he's quiet quitting. Here's a guy. Here's a guy that gets promoted to the first line and not through merit. We just need someone with a pulse to play there. To, you know, like Scheifele will just bank it in off your ass. Just be in the right point. And he sure hasn't looked like he's even interested in taking advantage of this opportunity to play with the first group. So I'm pretty sure, and he looks defeated as much. Talk about body language. Yeah. It's really something I've picked up on him as well. And so I joked that he was quiet quitting throughout the course of these last few games.
I got a good chuckle out of that one because it really hadn't, you know, his play had been lackluster, but just the way you'd phrase that, the quiet quitting, I was like, I think he is. I think he may, I don't know if he wants to play NHL hockey anymore. All right. On that, we'll do back to whack continuum. What do you got? This latest spate of games. How are you feeling?
Well, I made some notes during the week, and so I developed my notes before the two games this weekend. So I had it as before the weekend a 3.5, a very strong tilt towards the whack for me. But I'm going to downgrade it.
Whoa.
Down to a 1.75. So almost completely whack. The road trip out east was a disaster. The Jets were completely outclassed and unable to elevate their level of play. And they haven't been as the season progresses. It's like through the vibes, we will, you know, if we break the season down into maybe four 20 game chunks and each chunk represents a higher level of, you know, energy and activity and sense of urgency, we were able to generate the third level at the second level and outwork teams, out hustle teams, you know, in that second and first blocks of games. But now that we're in this third chunk of games, the rest of the league seems to have figured stuff out, caught up to us, and we haven't been able to continue to elevate our level of play. So that's what's concerning for me. The other thing, this continued variability in the line combinations. Oh. I think perhaps early in the season, it was a tool that could send a message to guys.
Motivator, yeah.
A bit of a motivator. So maybe it is something that works in November, but, you know, it isn't something that appears to be working for this group in February. So, you know, I don't know that you're going to have to find your, I think, coach like Bonus, who's coached in the NHL as long as he has and in various different capacities, he should have more tools in his tool belt than simply that one. And we haven't seen any other tools.
Good point.
And if he has, he's not using them or not applying them in the right way. So, you know, the Jets need something that, you know, they're not getting right now. We were basking in the glow of the vibes that Bonus brought, but now we're perhaps seeing some of the downside of or the things he can't do that got him chased out of Dallas and other places that were maybe at the time a little strange. Dallas has a good record. Why are they firing their coach? Well, maybe they were tired of seeing this type of trajectory their team took over the course of several seasons. So maybe we're seeing some of the same things now with the Jets that got Bonus fired from the Stars.
Well said. So I gave it a one for the same reason, and I'm primarily focused on the, you know, the East Coast trip. It was a true litmus test, a true indicator of where we're at relative to other Stanley Cup hopefuls. And, you know, we performed well in fits and spurts as we usually do, but the net overall outcome was extremely negative. And so, yeah, I'm giving it a one.
I hear you. What I really saw on that road trip was us straining to match the level of intensity and speed that our opponents brought to the game.
Right.
It didn't look like we were naturally wanting to play at that level. It was a level that was being forced upon us, and we were scrambling to meet it. Even when we could match it, it was forced and not natural.
I agree. So before we get to our pre-boarding announcements and our picks for first class and penalty box, I'm bringing back an oldie, but hopefully goodie. And
I love it.
And it's as longtime listeners might attest to, we used to get fake pitches from the Men's Sartorial Society, just, you know, helping fellows out with
classics
wardrobe choices that may escape under the radar. And the one thing I've noticed in, you know, coaching and sort of bringing my daughter through minor hockey is if you have kids and you have to tie your kids' skates, there's a really decent chance that at some point a dressing room full of adults has seen your ass. And I get it. You're bending over to tie your skates. Sometimes you're not cognizant of it. Nobody wants to see a quarter, a half of a dude's butt. And so the Men's Sartorial Society, I'm working in conjunction. We're creating a men's cummerbund. It's like a, and it's for this purpose only. And it's created, it's going to be like Spanx, but only a little manlier. And it's, you just slip it on before the game. And when you're tying your kid's skates, you don't have to worry about cinching up your belt like I do, because I don't want anybody seeing that. It's just so our listeners are aware, it's coming, and we're going to be pushing it hard.
Nice. The reverse cummerbund. I could use one.
All right. Pre-boarding announcements.
Okay, let's start. First class assignment brought to you, as always, by First Mining Gold. I believe they're still in business. Providing first class gold mining development advice and services since 2015. I'll jump in here. I'll go first. In an effort to remain positive, I'm going to nominate Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon to come up to first class.
Good
Both are quietly having very decent seasons. They're finally playing the way we'd all hoped they would when they were acquired prior to last season, and they're both playing well at the same time. Prior to this, each would have stretches of decent play, but usually while the other guy was struggling. Having them both competent at the same time has been a huge benefit for the Jets, mostly because they're now in roles that suit their skill set. Schmidt has stabilized the third pair and formed a solid pairing with Dylan Sandberg. That pair has the highest Corsi 4 percentage on the team with a minimum of 200 minutes. Dylan has played a lot of the season with Captain Chaos.
Captain Chaos.
And has produced a reasonable Corsi 4 percentage of 51.4. Granted, we are paying a lot for this slightly above average play. Okay, Schmidt makes $5.95 million and Dylan makes $3.9 million. They're expensive, and probably underperforming their contracts. But, you know, on a night-to-night basis, it doesn't really matter what they make, either for on-ice performance or for our viewing pleasure. But I think they're finally kind of, you know, solidified and sort of integrated into the team and the organization, and we're seeing some decent things from them. However, with their heightened salaries, we have no cap space left for any type of fancy meal, but we can offer each a hot towel. Who do you got, Mike?
So those are great picks. And I just to add, I think my agreement is almost, well, not exclusively, but it's obviously relative to last year, because we brought these guys in on trades, and they obviously, as you clearly pointed out, they make a lot of money, and last year was a bit of an unmitigated disaster. They've looked at, you know, at times some of our best defensive plays have been part of their contribution. So I agree. I'm going a bit, I don't know, let's say spite, but I'm going Connor Hellebuyck.
Yeah.
So you're thinking, hey, Mike, didn't I just tell you that he let in four goals in five shots? Absolutely. But I'm taking this also from a relative position. He goes, we go. Like the Rangers game, it's already alarming. We've lost five of our last six. We would have lost six straight, but for him standing on his head, and he had a 4.87 goals above expected in a single game. And he faced 51 shots, which is insane. And again, did he have a bad game against the Avalanche? Absolutely. But what's the first thing we say when we see Rittich and net against the Islanders? Yeah. Why do we not have our Vezina caliber goaltender in? I think this recent slide has really highlighted that. Again, he is, as he goes, we go. And so I wanted to recognize him in first class again for that.
Yeah, it's hard to argue that. And I'm just looking back at that Islanders game, the first one in Long Island. Rittich was in net, I believe. And I think he played a very reasonable game. But the second goal was weak.
Weak, very weak.
It was weak. It was a tight game. And I think, you know, that's a difference between an elite starting goaltender and the backup. Absolutely. We needed, you know, just that one goal on a night where we weren't getting a lot of offensive mojo, right? We had a good second period, but then early in the third, if I recall correctly, the Islanders score a bit of a soft one, and you can just see that the air was let out from our sails. And then today against the Islanders, just letting in just a couple of goals. Just we needed him to step up.
Yeah.
I just think the air kind of went out of the Jets a little bit too on the Horvat goal.
The shorter headed goal. Yeah. It was like you can see it. It's palpable.
And I it's tough to put it all on Rittich, but when you're dealing with something as fragile as the Winnipeg Jets are at the moment, there is no room for error. And I just think that in those two games, just that little difference between who Hellebuck is and typically is and who Rittich is, I think hurt us in those two games. You know, everyone has an off night. I don't know. Rittich certainly wouldn't have been better against the Avalanche than Hellebuck was on average. In those two games, I think we needed a little bit more from our tender than we got, and we were kind of in a little bit of a letdown.
Yeah, totally agree. Who you got for penalty box?
Well, I have us a new sponsor.
Oh, right. Yes. Have at her.
Brand new sponsor. Okay, so the penalty box is brought to you by the personal injury law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe. Through your aches and pains, we'll get you monetary gains. Call us at 1-800-BEARATREE. You know what BEARATREE is?
No.
Come on, law dog.
I don't.
The definition of BEARATREE, fraud or gross negligence of a ship's master or crew at the expense of its owners or users. Vexatious litigation or incitement to it.
All right. I skipped most of my third year. They probably taught it then.
Yeah, you didn't take Latin in law school?
No, I barely took English.
Fair enough. You barely took law. Ha ha. So I thought I was being real smart on this one when I came up with it a few days ago. I had done some homework. And then tonight, this individual was featured very prominently on the broadcast. So I look like a bit of a schmuck, or even more so than usual. I have Adam Lowry
in
the penalty box. He hasn't scored since December 11th. He has 4 points in the last 22 games. And he averages 14 to 15 minutes a night. He makes $3.25 million per season, which I'm not saying is a lot. But when you're getting 14 to 15 minutes a night and you're making multiple millions of dollars, we need more than 2 points in 20 games or 4 points in 20 games.
Yep.
Okay, this is not a delicious cocktail nor a recipe for success when you look at those totality of those. Part of it, I like him with Barron. I think that line needs some offensive punch, and it has to be Blake Wheeler. I just don't understand. And this is a legit role for a Blake Wheeler. You want to shake things up in the room. You want to send a message that, you know, nothing is sacred. Everyone's being held, you know, to account. Then put Wheeler with those guys.
Amen.
Because he's what they need, and they're what he needs. I don't know. That's just the way I see it. Who do you got in the penalty box?
I have our perilous coach, Coach Bones.
Yeah.
You touched on a lot of it, which was great. But where are the vibes? What happened? Where are the vibes? And I am obviously a significant proponent of Ehlers and his 14 minutes here, 13 minutes there, 15 minutes there, relegation to the second power play. I don't understand it, and I understand there's a bit of a tete-a-tete when it comes to the analytics community and sort of the traditional, I call it like I see it, community in terms of Winnipeg Jets analysis. But, his game tonight, he got, I think it was about 18 minutes. He was our best forward by far, and he creates chances that just other Jets don't create with as much consistency. The Stanley playing over Samberg, I don't get it. Like another perfect example is that in the third period of this Islanders game, we had a power play. The game was still in reach, and we put out Lowry, Gagne, Ehlers, Schmidt, and Pionk. Like, what the fuck is that? Pardon my language, but what is that? Like, that is ridiculous. I don't understand. And you said it best, is that I don't see a rhyme or reason to the line shifts and to the changes. I just see it as this didn't work for a period, so I'm putting all a blender and I'm gonna try it all over again. I haven't identified anything that I would want to keep stable and then build off of. I don't see it. And so he's in the penalty box and he's treading on thin ice.
I was trending to having coach in the penalty box. Like again, we're recording on a Sunday night. I did a lot of writing for this podcast through the week. I haven't written a lot on the weekend. So I had decided on Adam Lowry, but just through these last two games, I'm really seeing the same things you are. Just to reiterate your point, I don't know if I sent it to you, but our good friend Brian Johnson, at Brian Johnson 18, posted some stuff from It Is Ineffective Math. It is Winnipeg's 5-on-5 offense with Ehlers and without Wheeler on the ice. It's all red. It is all red in the offensive zone, and if you don't know what that means, it means really good.
Yeah.
And then he posted side-by-side Winnipeg's 5-on-5 offense with Ehlers and Wheeler. And there's some red on there, but a heck of a lot of blue,
a lot
and dark
less.
Blue.
Yeah.
And it's mostly in front of the net in the high danger area. So, and again, most of the red, if you look at it, is on the left side where Ehler plays, and it's mostly blue on the right side. So I think the point is here, Ehlers drives play with whoever he plays with the exception of Wheeler. Wheeler drags him down. Wheeler drags a lot of people down. Wheeler is no longer a good fit in the top six. He can play like he's been playing when he's out there with Lowry and Barron and bang in the odd one every fourth or fifth game. You can't bang in the odd one every fourth or fifth game or six games when you're playing with Ehlers and Scheifele.
Thank you.
You should be scoring on a much regular rate than what he's doing. So, yeah, I'm all over that one. I think your questioning of the coach is spot on.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll pep it up a bit. We'll go to in-flight entertainment.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
All right, Mike, I got a question for you. Earlier this week, I tweeted the Jets have to fix one of two problems. Wheeler as a top six forward or Pionk as the top four D-man. Fixing one will go a long way. Fixing both could make the Jets a Stanley Cup contender potentially. If you could only fix one, which would it be?
Oh, Sophie's choice on this one. I'm going to get rid of Wheeler. We have exceptional talent on the front end. It's our, outside of our goaltending, it's our best quality. And as you've so articulately sort of set out, that Wheeler drags everybody down. And Pionk, I get it. I've been one of his largest detractors, and he'll have a great game where he'll get a goal and assist, and he'll be our best player statistically and otherwise, and is sort of a bit of a bane of my existence. But right now, I think I would take the Wheeler route, but it's pretty darn close.
Yeah, I think when I originally wrote this question, I was leaning towards Pionk. But what we've seen recently is he's actually played reasonably well.
Right, yeah.
Or hasn't been the problem like he has been for much of the year, and it hasn't really affected the Jets' play. When we are running into trouble, it is we stop scoring. And I think Wheeler is having a stronger effect on us not scoring than Pionk is having on us negatively defensively. Now, that is a bit of a leap, but just that's my perception of it. And so I'm with you. I change Wheeler as a top six forward. What do you got, Mike?
Okay. So with the acquisition of Anita Ryder and all our pontification on all there's Taves talk and Domi talk, Meyer talk, which I was fairly certain right at the get-go that we weren't going to get, yeah, but I lobbied hard for him. Should we all just shut up at the trade deadline and let Elliot Friedman just work the room, and then we all just take notes at the end? Because this has been several trade deadlines in a row where we've all just been off. And I'm just talking about our sort of insulated Winnipeg Jets community. Should we all just, and I'm pointing two fingers directly at me, should we all just be quiet and just let it transpire?
It's a good question. I'm going to lean to no. I think it's part of what makes this whole thing of being a fan fun. I think that we should temper our expectations in terms of being able to actually affect the trajectory of these discussions and what's actually going to happen.
That's very fair.
I mean, us lobbying online as if there's some type of algorithm the Jets have that is trying to discern who would be the most sought after player by social media, Winnipeg Jets social media. No, let's talk about stuff. Let's have fun. And I think all of that type of discourse is healthy for the organization and keeping the fans engaged. I just think that we should let go in the sense that we actually don't have control or influence over the actual outcomes of the process.
Fair enough. All right, what you got?
All right, recent trade talk has suggested that Calder Trophy candidate Cole Perfetti may be added in order for the Jets to secure a top-level player of the trade. Now, I know he's hurt, and he's probably not moving, but I'm looking at this theoretically. Should Cole Perfetti or someone like him be considered an untouchable given his long-term value? How much would it take you to include him in some form of deadline deal?
Specific to the context that I saw this in was Meyer. Is that I forget who it was. I think it was Nick Kiprios who came out and basically said that any deal for Meyer, and you know, there were lots of contingencies to this. Obviously, it came out that Meyer did not want to sign with Winnipeg long term, so that was a bit of a slap in the face. But the original proposition was any deal for Meyer has got to include Perfetti, and I come out against that. Specific for this year, you're doing is replacing a better top six option with your rookie top six option, but it's not getting you to a point where you want to jeopardize your future to that extent for what at this stage and would have been a rental. If you can, even if you can sign him, I'm not sure I vibe with that. I think that, you know, I am very outwardly, you know, the McGrorty's and Lamberts of the world, while great, and I can get very excited about them at any given day, if it really increases your chance to win a Stanley Cup, I think those pieces are movable because they're generally replaceable as long as you don't empty the entire piggy bank. And I can't think, I just off the top of my head, I can't think of a player or players that would be available under these circumstances for Perfetti. But under that specific context, I was not in favor of it.
I would be in favor. I like Cole Perfetti. I think he's established himself as a bona fide NHLer. I would include him in a deal, not for a Meyer, who I never really was that enticed about, simply because I think I recognized early on that it was not going to be something the Jets could attain. But apparently the Jets are not close, but they've been in as a serious bidder on Chychrun from Phoenix. And I guess they're Arizona now, pardon me.
You're both just awful.
And if it cost, as part of a larger deal, if it cost Cole Perfetti going to Arizona for Jacob Chychrun, then that's something that I could, you know, stomach. For me, Cole Perfetti is a very good player. I question his ability to skate at the NHL level. It's great, but it's okay, but not great. And also, I know this is going to sound bad because I'm just saying this because he got hurt, or it may seem like that. I question his ability to withstand the physical play in the NHL. Not in the sense that he's going to get hurt every year, but he's going to get pushed around on a regular basis. Now, he was just a rookie this year. Maybe that'll change, but I see him as a long-term NHLer, but I don't know if he's going to be like an heir apparent to a Scheifele or a PLD. He's going to be a complimentary piece in the top six at best. And so if the deal had been right, I would have included him, but I don't think he has untouchable status, even given the level of play he's been able to attain this year.
Sure, and super quick, I agree with you. So yeah, to be clear, I don't hold him in that high regard where he's just untouchable under any circumstances. I've just, from what I've seen and where he's been included, I think we're selling a little low and selling him a little short. But I mean, like any deal for Chychrun, as you referenced, to me, that would require the Jets. They would need to do a complete overhaul of their D. Like, that's a Pionk gone. Get rid of one of even though they played well, Schmidt or Dillon. Like, if it's part of that, a part of a sort of quasi rebuild, I do think that, you know, and long term, I think we could use a more stable defensive core that's young. So I would have to give that some thought, but I'm not adverse to that off the top of my head.
Yeah. All right, you're up.
Okay, Anson Carter on a broadcast said what everybody knows, and it's low-hanging fruit, but basically came out in a public forum and said that, you know, 90% of the players that have no movement clause have Winnipeg on their list. So twofold, A, is that a fuck you to Anson Carter? And B, how hurt are your feelings?
Well, I mean, I don't necessarily think that... I think hockey players want to have as much control over the trajectory of their career as they can. And I think that if someone's going to be traded to... First of all, you got to put someone on there. So this is not a room full of rocket surgeons, right? They're just going to reiterate whatever their buddies tell them. And once something is the way it is, no one's going to change. So if everyone thinks this Winnipeg is the worst place to go in the NHL, then, you know, just no one's going to say St. Louis or Detroit. Like, you want to live in Detroit? That's better.
Yeah, fair.
But I don't know. I think it's the same thing as what Stastny and Schmidt went through. There's a bit of a perception around Winnipeg, and it's not a hard no. It's that they want to have control over saying yes to going to Winnipeg. So I think in many cases, let's not be myopic about this, that people would not want to go to Winnipeg under any circumstances, purely based on unsubstantiated bias. Okay. But I do think, you know, that some just want to have that step. Let's take a step back. Let's think about this and let's make an informed decision before I sign off on it. Everyone will have their own reasons. You know, is Edmonton on that list? I don't know. That you would think that people would be knocking on their door to sign as free agents to play with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, but they don't. So, no, I mean, if this boils down to, I just want to play where it's warm, I mean, you know, that's a small-minded approach. And if that led to winning, then, you know, LA would have won a lot more cups than they have, and Florida would have won a cup, and Tampa Bay's doing well, but Arizona isn't. So, Vegas has tried a ton of things to win there, and they've yet to get over the line. Their first year was their best year. So there's a lot more to winning than just going where it's warm. And if that's all you care about, you're not a winner.
Well, that was a very thoughtful and reasoned approach, and I didn't like any of it because I was trying to incite.
I ruined everything, Mike.
I was trying to incite riot, but your damn logic got in the way, and you're absolutely right. All right.
Just wait till we go out next week. We're going out next Friday. There's a bunch of us. We're going out for some drinks and a cigar. You think I ruined the podcast? Wait till I ruin that night too, being illogical.
I look forward to it.
Yes. All right. Here's the last question. A bit of a fun one. Bit of a controversial take on this one, but I'll throw it out there and see what you think. Do you think there's pressure from the league or from within the GM community, general manager community in the NHL, whether it be direct or indirect, to make deals with teams that will increase playoff viewership? For example, a GM who's trying to trade someone will take slightly less to upgrade LA or New York as opposed to making a deal with a smaller market like Winnipeg.
I like the galaxy brain on
that. Like, do you want to be the general manager that pushes the Jets over the top and then no one watches the playoffs?
I like where your head's at. It's tangential to my bitter pants question, but it is. So my short answer, I'm afraid, my friend, would be no. I think that...
Well, you're wrong. First of all, you're wrong. And vaccines. Let's talk about some vaccines.
I was like,
and Jamie Salley and Theo Fleury have an awesome podcast.
Oh, they, kidding. Oh my goodness. I'm going to have to cut that out. But yeah, I think the league obviously is very intent on these types of matters, but I hope anyway, at the strongest possible measure and way that, you know, none of that comes into play. I, you know, maybe there's a rich boys and girls club of owners who all, it's a big cabal and they conspire in this way, but I'd be reticent to put that out as with any sort of authority or belief.
Well, now who's not being fun?
Sorry, I bumped you out on
that one.
Because
that was a super fun question.
It was.
So for me, yes, it's a giant cabal. It's a business. Why wouldn't they cheat to make more money? It's not illegal.
A whole bunch of stone cutters.
Yes, I agree.
All right. Well, I get that was it. You want to take us out?
I'd like to say this has been fun, but after this last week, it's been something. It's been a job
necessary.
Done.
Yeah, job done.
Job done. So, fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge. Check us out on Twitter at Airport Lounge 55, with all episodes also available on Apple, Spotify, and Overcast Podcast. Be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge, because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets, go.
Happy birthday, Leon.